To quote Thomas Jefferson, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we discuss the basics of our constitutional republic and how our freedoms are being seized by public officials, both elected and unelected. I'm Mark DeLuzio, a former candidate for the U.S. Congress and a Gold Star father. Join me as we learn together how we can save this unique experiment that we call America. Hi, Mark DeLuzio, episode 54. I want to dedicate this episode to term limits. And everybody has their opinion on term limits. Most of the people I talk to think that term limits are a good thing. And there's probably a lot of great arguments, quite frankly, on either side of the argument on term limits, pro and con. So this is called the pros and cons of term limits. And like I said, there are good arguments on both sides. I want to go through, though, a little bit of history on term limits, give you a feel for what the founders thought, because they didn't all agree. There was one point in time I thought they all did agree, but they didn't all agree on term limits. And matter of fact, they all didn't agree on much, believe it or not. But they weren't fighting on what our country was supposed to be, which was a constitutional republic. They were fighting more about how to do it. I think the argument today is a lot different because we're talking about Marxism. We're rejecting the fundamental principles of our country out of hand, arguing that the Constitution is an old document made by some old white men who were slave owners, that it doesn't apply anymore. So we're not always arguing about how to achieve that more perfect union. We're arguing that we should at all, and moving towards things like socialism, which to me is the JV team for communism. Okay, well, that's all subjects for another day. Let's talk about term limits. Now, term limits are an important part of the whole discussion anyway. But let's just go back in a little bit of history here and talk about prior to the Constitution, which was signed in 1787, we had what we call the Articles of Confederation. And if you remember your history, the Articles of Confederation were very loose and really didn't have much play and allowed the states to do all kinds of crazy things and gave actually the states too much independence, as a country, it was all becoming counterproductive. So that's when our Constitution was founded, 1787. And then, of course, the Bill of Rights followed with getting a little bit more federal framework so that there's a clear division or as clear as possible between what the federal government should do and what the states should do. So again, subject for another day, but the Articles of Confederation back then, which were between 1781 and 1789, kind of overlapped into the Constitution until we got the Bill of Rights in 1789. It was more of a suggestion than it was anything else. There were guidelines, but there wasn't treated as a law. So, but in the Articles of Confederation, they did have term limits. Delegates to the Confederation could serve no more than 3 years in any six-year period, okay? And they were trying to prevent political entrenchment and promote rotation in office. And this, I think a lot of the people that are pro-term limits today are looking for that same thing, right? The downside was loss of experienced leaders, okay? Institutional memory. It weakened Congress during fragile national unity. It strengthened state dominance, and this was the problem with the Articles of Confederation anyway, over national interest, okay? So stronger states with more population, more representatives, chose national security measures that favored them and maybe not necessarily the entire nation. Policy instability, reduced accountability. So when they wrote the U.S. Constitution, There were no term limits for Congress or the president. And there were no term limits for the Senate. But the House was reelected every 2 years and the Senate every 6 years. And that's exactly what it is now. Of course, the 17th Amendment took away the rights of the state legislators appointing their federal senators from their state, which I think was a big mistake. But anyway, and then, of course, the president had a 4-year term. But there were no term limits, so the president could serve multiple terms, more than two. And again, the 25th Amendment the 22nd Amendment was the amendment that actually put term limits in for the president. And this is after Roosevelt served a number of terms, the founders thought that elections were your natural check on power, that if your representative or what have you was not behaving right, not doing the things you want them to do, you vote them out of office. And I know sometimes that's easier said than done, right? But that was their thinking. They also wanted to retain experienced leaders because it just there's a learning curve. There's a lot of rules and all kinds of other things going on in Congress that take a little bit of while to learn. You don't have to show up and give a speech and vote. There's a lot of intricate rules and parliamentary procedures that you have to learn. So it's not an easy thing just to show up and be effective on day one, okay? And they also thought that, no term limits will incentivize good behavior, where they thought maybe, geez, if you had term limits, you could do whatever you want on your last term because you have no repercussions, right? So that was the way the Constitution was set up. Now, let me go to some of the founding fathers and just give you their thoughts on term limits, because they did differ. Alexander Hamilton was opposed to term limits. He argued in Federalist Number 72 against term limits. He believed re-election incentivized good behavior and allowed retention of proven leaders. Okay, that was his view. James Madison, the father of the Constitution, the guy that wrote the Constitution, opposed term limits. He felt frequent elections for every House, which is every 2 years, and Senate every 6 years, provided natural limits without needing formal restrictions. George Mason supported term limits. He worried about indefinite presidency and saw danger in leaders serving for life. And by the way, that's one of the arguments people make today. When you look at people like Joe Biden, who was in federal government for over half a century, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Grassley on the Republican side. And so we have a lot of long term. Dianne Feinstein, before she passed away, she would not leave. She was so ill. She was clutching onto power, man. And there was nothing to take her out of that seat unless she died. And that's what happened, right? I'm not laughing at her death. Don't get me wrong. I'm saying that some of these people cling on to power and they don't think what's really good for the people, right? Now, if you're not capable of doing the job, either physically or mentally, you need to get out. But that's not how it works, right? So again, another argument for the people who support term limits, right? Thomas Jefferson cautiously supported term limits. He favored rotation in office and warned against indefinite reelection. But he's worried about creating an office for life. So he was on the fence. And Thomas Jefferson probably was the best thinker out of all of them. And this is why this guy's on the fence, because he saw the pros and the cons and, wasn't really able to fall on one side strongly or the other. And George Washington was neutral. But he voluntarily stepped down after two terms, okay? So he established an informal tradition of stepping down after two terms. And that was pretty good until we got to this boy named FDR, the darling of the left. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt served I can't remember now. Was it four terms? But anyway, that two-term deal was honored all the way through. All right. It was kind of an unwritten policy, I guess you could say, with term limits, right? So let's just, again, we mentioned a few of these, but let's just review the pros and the cons. And then I have a couple questions for you on the end. And I will let you know what I think about term limits. The pros: prevents enrichment of power and stops indefinite incumbency, right? Term limit pro: encourages fresh perspectives and new ideas. It reduces corruption and reliance on special interests. Another pro is it increases political competition by opening more seats. And it reflects founders' Republican ideal of rotation in office. Okay. Let's look at the cons. Loss of experience. Removes knowledgeable legislatures. Shifts the power to unelected staff and lobbyists. Reduces accountability. Lame duck politicians may ignore constituents. I can't believe that would ever happen. Can you? A politician ignoring their constituents? Except for around election time or when they need your money? Okay. I had to throw that in. Sorry. Again, when I ran for Congress, I got to see the pain on the people's face in the 2nd District in Arizona. And I got to see also that they were being totally crapped on and abused and ignored. Nobody gave a rat's ass about them. And I'll tell you right now, I'm sick and tired of hearing, how are Democrats going to regain power? That's the focus. How about the focus on the problems of the American people? And if you take care of that, most likely you'll get elected to power. But everyone's thinking about, it's like losing weight, right? If I just focus on the scale and look at the pounds on the scale, I'm not going to lose weight. I have to focus on the things that are going to make me lose weight so that scale moves in the right direction. By the way, I'm not saying you don't look at the scale, but I need to be counting leading indicators like calories, nutrition. How much sleep do I get, right? How much exercise do I get? If those things are calibrated correctly and I hit those numbers and hit my targets, the scale should come down, if that is my goal, all right? These Democrats are thinking, well, how do I get into power? Newsflash, take care of your constituents. Wonderful things will happen to you if you take care of your people. The people, you know, you swore an oath to take care of. And this goes for the Republicans too, by the way. It's not all one-sided, all right? So again, reduces accountability. The lame duck politicians will ignore constituents. I don't know. Like I said, I think that happens now anyway. Encourages short-term focus over long-term solutions. That is a definite. I see it in business all the time. I got to put points on the board. I hate that term. I got to put points on the board. We got to show some results. Meanwhile, you cut your nose off despite your face. And 5 years later, you've got bigger problems than you did, you know, had you been more patient and more strategic going forward. And limits voter choice by preventing re-election of trusted leaders. So those are the pros and cons. And by the way, there's arguments on both sides. So a couple questions. What makes you think that voters who elected a poor politician time and time and time again will not do so again when they're termed out? I have this conversation in Connecticut all the time with people. How are you electing Richard Blumenthal as senator? Da Nang Dick, who lied about his tour in Vietnam. Or Chris Murphy, his sidekick. Or Governor Lamont, who never saw a tax he didn't like. How is it that Connecticut is continuing to elect these guys? All right? Okay, Let's say Blumenthal gets termed out. Do you think the clowns that elected this guy are going to elect somebody that you approve of? I don't think so. I don't think so. It'll just be a younger Dick Blumenthal or younger Nancy Pelosi that will come in and pick up right where they left off. Remember, the people vote these people in, right? What if the politician in question that has to resign because of term limits is somebody you love? See, when I got asked this question in when I was running for Congress, Paul Gosar, who is a friend of mine and is one of the most conservative Republicans in Congress. Matter of fact, we did a podcast episode with Paul a while back on emergency spending. You should listen to that one. It might enrage you. Paul was loved. Now, they redistricted the whole Arizona like they did all the rest of the country because of the new census in 2020. So Paul was no longer running in the district that I was running for Congress in. Matter of fact, I never run against Paul because I support Paul. And Paul was, you know, just still is a phenomenal legislator. So I asked a question. They asked me about term limits. I said, well, you guys know Paul Gosar, right? Yeah, yeah, we love Paul. And I would say, how would you feel if Paul got termed out and you lost Paul? And almost to a person, they all said, we never thought about it that way. I mean, you gotta take the good with the bad, right? And you risk losing somebody that you really like, that's really doing the job that you put him there for. So why would you want to mess that up? Okay. So I think this whole thing with term limits and the mentality of the American voter, everybody thinks there's a simple solution to all these complex problems, and there are no simple solutions. Just by putting up a wall, we're not going to stop illegal immigration. But they think, put up a wall and we're done. It doesn't work that way, okay? Term limits, same thing. If we don't address the root cause of the problem that we're trying to solve, it won't matter. There are no silver bullets, no quick fixes. The problem is immorality, crapping on our constitutional rights by not following the Constitution, the backroom payoffs, the lobbyists who are donating millions and millions of dollars to these congressional campaigns, the military-industrial complex, where members who actually vote on contracts for defense contractors get to own the stock of those companies. How'd you like that? You own stock in Raytheon. You're a congressman. Now a bill comes across your desk that says, hey, we have to award, you know, $5 billion contract to Raytheon. Where's the independence? Where's the independence in that? Yeah, I know we have a STOCK, stock policy. Stop trading on congressional knowledge. Obama put it in 2012 and patted himself on the back. I got rid of corruption with Congress. Do you know what the penalty is first time? If you trade on insider trading, again, it's standing for stop trading on congressional knowledge, STOCK. Okay. The penalty for first time, if you get caught, $200. And you don't have to tell the public. $200. Okay. So it's all bull. We're not addressing the root cause. If we address the root cause of why we think we need term limits, then we wouldn't need term limits. And in all due respect, the voters are to blame here. Because the same voters who say they want term limits, I think you're getting a sense now, I'm against term limits. The same voters who say they're for term limits are the same people who put in these legislators that they want to get rid of. Yeah, not maybe one for one. So how is that going to solve anything? I don't see it solving anything, right? Now, what I do see it doing is taking away the rights of the people. Because whether or not you like a candidate or not, your right to vote for that candidate and get that candidate in office is a should be a protected right. And to have a law come in to say, yeah, we know you like Paul Gosar, but we're not going to let you vote for him anymore because he's termed out. I don't think that's right. As a matter of fact, I don't think it's right for the president either. I mean, a lot of the things that the president, you know, puts in place are long-term solutions that you'll need him in there a number of years to see them through. Instead of spending half of his administration, his first term, let's say, campaigning for the second term. With Congress, it's even worse because you've got a two-year term and congressmen have to start campaigning. The first thing a new congressman happens to him when he gets into office or her is go raise money. I'm going to put you in a room. Here's a telephone. Go make phone calls. Raise money for the party. That's their first job when they get there. I know because I've talked to congressmen who successfully made it to Congress, right? Well, wait a minute. I got to work with on the American people. I promised them to do this, that, and the other thing. No. Go raise money. Matter of fact, you don't raise a certain amount, you don't get on any committees. That's how it works, by the way. It's unbelievable. So, matter of fact, I was told that you had to raise $1 million just to be considered on the House Ways and Means Committee. To be considered. There's no guarantee you'll get on that most cherished committee of all committees, right? If you don't, you might end up on the Rose Garden Committee where you, you know, argue over which landscapers and which plants you're going to plant in the Rose Garden. I'm being facetious. There's no such committee, but you get my point, right? So I think it's taking away constitutional rights from the people. The people should vote who they want in office. Whether or not you and I like who they vote in office should be a secondary matter to the fact that they should have the right to elect their representatives and their elected officials. That's my view. And we're not always going to agree, whether it be a president, a congressman, a you know, senator, governor. But, hey, look, at the federal level, I don't support term limits at all. In fact, I don't even support him for the president. So, again, that's just me. But like I said, there are very good arguments on the other side, too. This is one of those deals where it's not a black and white either or type of, you know, subject. I mean, you know, there are really good arguments. When you look at the power brokers like Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, on our side, Lindsey Graham, McConnell, these guys have networks that could bury you tomorrow if they wanted to. They've developed such political networks, not only in their own home state, but throughout the whole country. And they will take you down. So they're allowed to establish that kind of network, all right, and that kind of power. So again, there is a very good reason. But if you look at some of the things they're doing, they're illegal. But we're not addressing the illegalities of what these people are doing. Then you got to ask yourself, well, why? I don't know. I go back to what Hillary Clinton said. You guys arrest me and bring me into trial, I'll take half of Washington down with me. That was alarming when she said that. Which basically means they have dirt. Look at Mayor Adams in New York City. He started pushing back on Obama's illegal immigration policy. And look what happened to him. They said, okay, we got some chips we're going to call. We know you pay that guy off. And and all of a sudden the Justice Department got involved and the guy was persecuted. Right? And almost prosecuted. I don't even sure where that stands right now, I'll be honest with you. But anyway, that's how it works, right? So everybody's kind of buying off everybody else. And don't you think that just because, if you think that's a reason for term limits, don't ever think that the person coming into that office as a new elected candidate isn't going to have that kind of dirt on them as well. Lord knows. I mean, even with AI now, you know, it's so easy to generate a picture with you with some hot looking babe, right? Holding hands, or even worse than that, in bed, right? And all of a sudden you get a letter in the mail and it says, by the way, if you don't vote this way on this bill, this letter is going to the press and it's going to your wife. All right. Now you're sitting there saying, well, that's all fake. I'm not worried about this. I didn't do this. Oh, yeah. Once it gets out into the public, you're a dead man. Doesn't matter. So these are the kind of things that we're looking at here. These are the immoralities, the illegalities that we think term limits are going to abolish all those issues and make everything pure. Not going to happen. It's not going to happen. So I am against term limits because I don't think term limits, just like I didn't think the flat tax is going to solve our tax problems. Okay. We got to get to the root cause here and find out what's going on. And then you'll walk away like the founders did saying, you know what? You know, if we're pure, we don't need term limits. And even if we had term limits, it's not going to solve the things you think it's going to solve. That's my opinion. Anyway, you can disagree. That's fine. That's what this country's all about. So anyway, that's my view. A little bit of history, a little bit of thought behind, you know, where did term limits come from? The pros and cons of term limits. At one time, I thought term limits were a good thing. I don't anymore. The more I thought about it, the more I kind of went into it. I'm a good problem solver, and I'm looking at this saying term limits is a Band-Aid, a weak Band-Aid, and it will easily fall off once a drop of water hits it, and it's not going to fix the things we think it's going to fix, right? Okay, thank you. Episode 54, the pros and cons of term limits. Stay safe out there. God bless Charlie Kirk. And I knew Charlie not well. I've spent probably 90 minutes with him one-on-one. Well, actually, my son and I spent 90 minutes with him one-on-one. When I was running for Congress, he wanted to get to know me and meet me, and he was gracious and asked a lot of good questions, why you're running and all that good stuff. And he'll be missed. But I don't think the people who, you know, you could argue Charlie was term limited out, right, with that gun. And guess what? He's not gone. And they just woke a sleeping bear. I mean, when the Emperor of Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, that was one of his comments. He said, I think we woke the sleeping bear. And the movement of what Charlie's all about is going to be even bigger and greater than Charlie probably could have ever imagined. So anyway, God bless Charlie. God bless you. God bless America. And we'll see you guys next time. Episode 54, the pros and cons of term limits. See you next time. Thanks for listening to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. The Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems. Other episodes can be found on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio. Until next time, may God bless you, may God bless America, and may America bless God.